Welcome. I'm Jenny Ray, an independent consultant with the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team. Our team provides education, resources, and networking opportunities for military family service professionals as they help military families build resilience and navigate life cycle transitions. We invite you to engage with us and your colleagues in conversations on military life cycle issues. In this Let's Talk Transitions podcast, I have the privilege of chatting with Dr. Kenona Southwell and Kira Ludeker. Our conversation centers around the current challenges of women student service members and veterans as they transition into civilian life and begin college in hopes to accomplish their academic and career goals. We then dive a little bit deeper into the Focus Forward Fellowship, a program that was offered through the Military Family Research Institute at Purdue University. Focus Forward was designed and continues to help women student service members and veterans build their skills and leadership and a sense of community, all with their peers. We conclude the episode with Kenona and Kira sharing several unique and beneficial strategies that military family service providers, you, our listeners, may be able to use in your work as you support military service members and their families. Let's dive in and listen to Kenona and Kira share their thoughts. Welcome, Kenona and Kira. It's a pleasure to have both of you here with me today. Kenona, can we begin by having you share with our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. So thank you so much, Jenny, for having us here today. My name is Kenona Southwell. I was trained as a military family and health and work scientist over at Purdue University. I did all of my assistantship with the Institute, Military Family Research Institute, with Shelley McDermott as my advisor. I have since moved on after completing my PhD, and I work with Eagle Technologies, which is a technology company, of course, and they specialize in supporting research for mental health. My time with the company has gone into supporting SAMHSA with doing research in that same space. So thank you so much again, and I look forward to speaking about one of my passions, which is doing research that helps members of the military and their families.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing, Kenona. Kira, let's go ahead and have you share a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Hi, Johnny. Thanks for having me. It's just, I have a smile on my face when listening to Kenona introduce herself, because it's just such a great reminder of the team that I used to work with. Everyone is so wonderful. My name is Kira Ludeker. I currently still work for Purdue University. I work in the graduate school now in the Office of Interdisciplinary Graduate Programs, where I manage the Ecological Sciences and Engineering Interdisciplinary Graduate Program. So I am no longer with the Military Family Research Institute, but I just started this newer role back in April with the graduate school. And prior to that, I was with MFRI for about 4 years, where I led the practitioner side Focus Forward and managed the education and employment team there. I am a veteran, United States Army, about 8 years, and gosh, I've been out since about 2016, so I wouldn't necessarily classify myself as recently separated. It has been a while, but that's how I kind of got into that field. I was a student service member at one point during have an associate's degree, a bachelor's degree, and then my master's degree. The only degree that I was not a student service member was for my master's degree. Working with Focus Forward is one of my most fondest professional experiences, just being a woman veteran and being able to work with women veterans and student service members in that capacity. So, I missed working with the team at MFRI very much, and excited to talk more and kind of reminisce about
Great. Thanks so much for sharing, Kira, and thank you so much for your service. I think each of you, you and Kanona, will share so much from different backgrounds, the pieces that you can each contribute, your practitioner side, your personal experience as a veteran, Kanona, your research side. I think all of these aspects combined can really help fold and bring these pieces together to share with professionals who are listening today. So thank you again, both, for being here. One of the pieces that you two have worked on as a team and then other contributors as well is a manuscript that I came across and our team came across as well. And each of you contributed to, it's called Focus Forward Fellowship, Evaluation of a Program for Women Student Service Members and Veterans. The manuscript is currently under a peer review with a journal. So for those that are listening today and are interested in reading this article, please check back. We'll be sure to add that link so that you can hopefully read that when it gets published. So as we begin, I wonder, whoever wants to respond to this question, why study or why should we learn about women student service members and veterans, especially, you know, during this time?
So a recent study by the Institute for Veterans and Military Families identified that there are 2.1 million women service members and veterans. 84% of post 9/11 women veterans have some college degree or higher. So that percentage is much higher than what you would find for non-veteran women, as well as male post 9/11 veterans. So we're seeing that we do have quite a bit of women veterans who are participating in the university environment. However, we've seen that there's quite a bit of evidence, both in the research sphere as well as anecdotal evidence, that there's a lot of good reason to pay attention to women student veterans. So a set of researchers, Fredman and colleagues, found that partnered women service members or veterans are at relatively greater risk of academic problems, particularly in light of having post-traumatic stress disorder, as well as other relationship strains. Women veterans also are much more likely than men to have experienced military sexual trauma. In a national study, they found that the true prevalence of women veterans with depression was about 47% greater than rates of diagnosis would suggest. So we're seeing that there's that interplay of that past military service and trauma. And then we have them transitioning from the military into civilian life. So when it comes to trying to get employment, we're seeing that female veterans had higher rates of unemployment than their male counterparts. Mm-hmm. About 40% of women compared to 19% of male veterans reported that it took them over a year, or at the time of the study, they were still looking for employment. They also find that 66% of female veterans reported that their transition out of the military was very difficult. And that was compared to only about 51% of males.
Mm-hmm.
Again, when it comes to being prepared for the transition out of the military, you find more female veterans being unprepared. And then once they're within that system of transitioning out, just about 54% of them did not feel prepared to navigate the resources of a local community. That compared to 35% of veteran males. So we're seeing that there are some challenges for women veterans who are trying to transition out of the military, as well as those that are maybe still in the service. And among those that are transitioning, 59% of them found a loss of connection with a military community.
Mm.
A similar percentage found a loss of sense of purpose. And finding employment was a challenge for a significant portion of them. So we've thought about women veterans and women service members in light of those challenges, and the Focus Forward program is really designed to try to give women the skills that they would need to try to gain employment, to give them that social support and that connection to a military community that they may have lacked, as well as to get the skills to advocate for themselves so that they can develop professionally as well as within the school setting.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing. There's like so much great research there that is talking about not only like the successes that women student service members are going through, but also those key challenges. And I thank you so much for pointing those out. I think that we're going to talk more about this Focus Forward Fellowship program, but I think that what we could do is maybe share, Kira, from your own perspective too, just kind of where you transition and how maybe those key pieces that Kanona was pointing out kind of relate to you or do not, and what you're kind of seeing in your own work as well.
Sure. Yeah, I am happy to speak to that a little bit. I'll always tie it a little bit back to research. I'm not as great with Kanona as precise percentages and numbers, but if anyone wants to know where I kind of plucked a little piece of knowledge at afterwards, I can definitely do my best. But a lot of it just comes from having conversations and reading and talking to people about the program. What we do know about women is they are more likely to choose military service as a way to pay for education, for education benefits. That's definitely not a secret. It was a huge part, not the only reason why, but it was a huge part of why I personally enlisted. A lot of fellows have disclosed that education benefits, the pathway to a better future, education, employment, finding meaning in all of that, getting a degree with the hopes of ending up in an environment of meaningful employment with something that they desired. We also know from it was the Purdue Gallup Index that women student veterans and service members felt less supported than their male counterparts during their academic experiences. And a lot of that is carried over from their transition from the military. It's just because a lot of military communities have such a high presence of male counterparts, women service members are less likely to see women, to see a reflection of themselves in leadership. They're less likely to find a mentor. They're less likely to have those more positive, meaningful, and impactful experiences. Unfortunately, that kind of carries over to their education experiences. A lot of different components of Focus Forward are providing those experiences for fellows who come to the program, so that they can connect, so that they can connect with other women, just in general, whether that's women service members, veterans, people in different sectors of employment. We hear it so often. I say we hear it, as if I'm still working with it. But something that we've heard in the past from fellows is that they've never, they get to the Focus Forward experience, and they've never been in a room with that many other women veterans. So that really speaks a lot for itself, and then for it to be such a positive experience, I think it's very intentionally designed as an environment to support women, to meet women where they are at, and support them in their academic endeavors and their professional endeavors. It really is. It's not a competitive environment, which so often military spaces can be. My personal experience, I would say that I fall more on the traditional side. So all military students are non-traditional, just based off of their military experience.
Right.
traditional student looks like. Me personally, during my military service, I was single. I was not married. I don't have any children. And I was a little bit younger. And so I enlisted when I was 17. And so, you know, there are a lot of experiences that student military and veteran students closer to the non-traditional side who are older, who have spouses, who have children, families. So I would say that my experience, you know, doesn't often align with, you know, that the extreme end of the non-traditional. But a lot of our Focus Forward fellows, it does. And so it's women from all different walks of life. But that's something about women that is so unique, is that we really do it all. We're professional working women. We are partners. We are mothers. We have pets. You know, we're constantly trying to take care of these other areas of our life. And so often we're not taking care of ourselves. And so mm-hmm. Focus Forward is an intentionally designed environment to support these women. And so I think that that's something that is it's very special. It's very unique about women and what Focus Forward does for women.
Great. Thank you so much. I don't know if Kenona, if you wanted to tie back into anything there, or I'll just open that space for you.
Yeah, definitely. So Kira touched on the point of just how diverse women student service members are. You know, you do have some that appear to align more with the traditional student, especially if they're more within that age range, or if they don't have children, they don't have partners, so they may be able to live on a college campus. But then you have others who are more like the non-traditional students without a military connection, and they have a lot more constraints when it comes to living on campus and really being in that college environment that is really helpful for the academic success. So I think within that, we will come back and talk about the little nuances within those women that indicate so much so why Focus Forward is really needed for those different subgroups within those women.
Definitely. No, thank you so much for touching base on that. I think that both of you have highlighted, obviously, the significant pieces of why we want to study women student service members and veterans, and continue to do so because of that growing population, especially for those that are leaving the military. And I think, I know you've touched a lot of bases about the specific challenges. Specifically, you mentioned a few of them, Kenona, PTSD, but some of those specific challenges, I'd like to just kind of highlight a few of those for our listeners who, you know, might not be in depth into the literature, or, you know, in depth to their own personal experiences, or maybe don't work hand in hand with student service members. So if one of you could start maybe just sharing some of those highlighted specific challenges that women student service members and veterans experience.
Sure. A little bit too. Kenona touched on it a little bit already. I think that one of the most obvious challenges to state, and Kenona touched on it a little bit, is that women service members and veterans are more likely to have experience with military sexual trauma, which MST. And so, unfortunately, a lot of different symptoms can, you know, kind of branch off from that. Like women who have you know, experienced military sexual trauma are, you know, at high risk for depression, anxiety. I'm sure Kenona can also speak to, you know, substance abuse. So that is a larger concern that kind of ties into some of the other general concerns struggling to find support in being successful in those endeavors. It could be, you know, because they have not found a meaningful connection with their advisor, and so maybe they are less likely to go to their advisor to seek out support when choosing classes, and so then maybe they choose classes that are not a great fit for them, and then they end up in the class and, you know, they're really struggling. And I will say that, you know, again, this is a unique challenge for women, student service members and veterans. You know, I get it a lot, so I can speak to it from personal experience. You know, if I, you know, go into, you know, an office or an event that's military-related, that's veteran-related, if I try to park my car in the, you know, parking spot at Lowe's that's designated for military service members, I get dirty looks. I get comments. I have had people explicitly ask me, you know, why was I doing that? Like, why did I park my car there? And women consistently have to explain and justify their military service, whereas men do not. And again, that's not being, you know, that's not being hateful towards our male counterparts. There's a lot of really wonderful allies and supporters out there. And I would say in the last several years that I had been working in this space specifically for women, a lot of military and veteran specific organizations have been making a great effort to address that issue. You know, oftentimes self-identifying as a veteran for women can be a traumatic experience. If you don't, if you're encountering that, if you're having an interaction with someone who doesn't know what to say, or, you know, says something, you know, where you're trying to get help and, you know, they just kind of look at you funny or ask what your husband did or what your partner did. And so that is something that, you know, it's a specific challenge for women just because our male counterparts hardly ever find themselves. I won't say there are male counterparts out there who have. But women find themselves in that situation more often, and so sometimes that can be intimidating on a college campus. If you, you know, have never been to their office before, and you are, you know, trying to get some help, and you know, you realize that you have to self-identify, and then you have to kind of talk yourself through the process of, well, what is that going to mean, and how is that going to make me feel? And so I would say those, you know, three things are kind of come to the top of my list, and I'm sure Kanoa will have to add, but military sexual trauma, and just not having as much support or in terms of mentors, advisors during their higher education and employment experiences, and then just, you know, constantly having to justify when it comes to self-identification, you know, justifying your military service and having that constant pressure of society to prove that you served.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing those. Kanoa, did you want to share?
Kira has mentioned several things that have been identified in the literature with studies with women service members or veterans. The women service members are in a very unique space, because there's a challenge of their past military service, but then there's also a challenge in the present, in the current university environment. And that makes the dance really difficult when trying to navigate the school. So for example, as we've mentioned, the experience with trauma, there's also this struggle that they may have had in the military community with trying to belong, getting that sense of belonging among a male predominated environment where it may have been demeaning and supportive. And, you know, they had to try to figure things out and do a lot on their own. And then also, you know, the literature has spoken about women having the need to act masculine and trying to outperform the men, you know, trying to earn their respect in the military sphere, and it's difficult for them trying to present themselves in the civilian environment, which is totally different. Right. But then now you bring them into a university environment where the rules are different, even more so from the military, and yet still different from just being in the regular civilian community. So they've found that women, although they're highly committed to completing their degrees, they've had difficulties creating relationships with faculty and other students, especially those traditional students who may be so many years younger, you know, without a lot of work experience and, you know, their lifestyle on campus and in the university environment, you know, may be so different from what the from what the service members experience. So then you find that with the quality of their relationships with faculty and peers, if it's not at a good level, it does have the potential to influence their degree completion. Actually, a study from MFRI found that service members who were not able to connect with faculty and their peers, those relationships put them at higher risk of attrition. So, you know, it really is something that we focus on with the Focus Forward program, because there's so much in terms of having those good connections and that social support at the university. The research has also found that women veterans would appreciate some guidance and some support from other women veterans like themselves. So people who have had their experiences, but as we've mentioned, there are so few of them on the university campuses, they may not be able to make those connections. And within the university, you know, sometimes they need to adjust their understanding of themselves in relation to other people and how they navigate the challenges of being in university, having their family lives, having their full-time work, and of course all of those competing demands may have some challenges for their academic functioning. And of course their satisfaction with their university experience. So a lot of research has been highlighting the importance of women veterans, not just having relationships with other women who have military experience, but also with their peers, also with faculty. And there's a need, they have called, like Kira mentioned, for services that have specialized for those women that could help them navigate the university environment and have that social support that they would that they need so that they can persevere and complete their degrees.
Definitely. Thank you for addressing those. I too have seen these in my own research for MFLN, and kind of have highlighted these through blogs and other podcasts, and it's exciting to see that there's progress of programs and services and universities and colleges, all of these places coming together to support women student service members and veterans. And as you guys have both highlighted, several of those challenges that they're experiencing while they wear many of hats, it's hard to take one hat off and like focus on just one. And so I think that if we, you know, kind of jump a little bit forward, we can talk about the Focus Forward Fellowship program. And I think what we'll discuss here further is that this program really focuses on involving all of these aspects that women student service members and veterans go through. And it's specifically focused for women. So let's talk a little bit more about the program. Again, it's called Focus Forward Fellowship. And maybe, Kara, would you like to share a little bit about what the program's goals might be?
Sure. So I'm going to tie it off to research, because the Forward is a program that is designed based off of evidence-based research. Just like all of MFRI's programs, MFRI
most brilliant minds that I have ever had the ability to work with. Dave, Todd, the director of research, and being able to work with people like Kenona and graduate students who, there's a variety of people who we just try to focus forward as a dynamic community, and it really is. It's grown so much since the pilot cohort, which took place in 2016. It started off with just one cohort, a small number of participants, and now has grown to this community of, talking about in the hundreds, just fellows and who are involved. But it's not without all of the hard work that, all of the minds behind it, people who are still there, people who have come and gone. But it is all centered on the research that we have been talking about, looking at data showing women veterans and service members have very complex experiences, and then moving into the higher education sector, they are, again, because of their unique experiences, experiencing unique challenges. And so there's so much research out there, and that's how Focus Forward was built, is that this is what the research is telling us. At the time, there were not a lot of programs that were out there specifically tailored to meet the needs of women who fell into that category. And the research was showing that there was a need to develop something. And so that's kind of how Focus Forward came to fruition. It's changed so much throughout the years. I watched it change and grow, it really is. It's like you said, Jenny. It's designed to support women in all of those different sectors, in their academic endeavors, in their professional employment goals, and then also just personally. Let's get women in a room with other women and surrounded by women. And again, I swear I'm not hating on our male counterparts and allies that are out there. But women veterans experience, they're exposed to communities surrounded by men so frequently and surrounded by women so infrequently, that is something that's just so powerful and kind of tearing those walls of competition and judgment down. And it really is, just that we are there to support these women across all of those areas. A lot of it is focused on education and employment. That's kind of the department at MFRI that Focus Forward is housed in. The two main goals, I think, and Kenona can speak a little bit to this after I wrap up, are significantly looking to improve and promote persistence to graduation. So catching these women at a point in time where, either they might be struggling with some academic endeavors or maybe right before they might be getting ready to struggle, so that they have a community of support and a community with resources to kind of grab from, so that we can help see them through their education. And I can definitely attest to the fact that we have seen that, fellows who start in the program, they go as their cohort, maybe they're an undergraduate student, and we try to keep in touch with fellows so that we can collect some details on what they're doing, and also still provide support and resources. But I have seen fellows who were part of the 2016 pilot cohort as an undergraduate student persist through a master's degree, go on to a doctorate, become parents, meaningful employment, and so it's been really wonderful to see that all come to fruition. But I think promoting describe the different components of the program in a nutshell.
Thank you so much for sharing that. The program is so well-rounded. I think that it's hard to share just like two aspects of it. So thank you so much for sharing those pieces. Kanona, would you like to share about the program goals?
Sure, yes. The overarching goal is mainly for the long term. So making sure that women service members or veterans complete their degrees, that they're successful. Once they complete that degree, they're able to get a career, like Kira mentioned, that they're happy with, a career that is satisfying for mm-hmm. them. But in the short term, and it's something that may be the most important aspect of that program, it's just giving the women a sense of belonging, as an understanding of themselves as women, as service members, as veterans, as students, that at the time in their current roles, that they can be their best selves. Mm-hmm. And of course, giving them the skills so that they can engage in behaviors that can continue to help them be successful. So things like networking, things like writing a resume, especially when having military experience that they're not quite sure how it translates into a civilian job, making sure that they have those tools so that we can succeed at the time, if it's a part-time job they're looking for while they're at school, or if it's upon graduation. So another aspect I think that was very important is just for women to be self-advocates, for them to be able to speak up for themselves, for them to be able to get the courage and the drive to achieve the goals that they like to achieve. So as you mentioned, Jenny, very well-rounded program. Mm-hmm. I too am very proud of the work that the Military Family Research Institute has been doing, you know, to help make sure that we're meeting the needs of those women.
Yeah, and I definitely think the program has and continues to serve those needs for the women. I get to, in a later podcast, discuss with Diane Darling, and I'm excited for her to share her own experience from the Focus Forward Fellowship. But really what you highlighted, Kanona and Kira, is that this program is really focused on helping those women, you know, stay persistent and keep pushing on, but also a space to reach out. And I think what I've found, too, in my own research and maybe my own personal life, I struggle, and other women maybe just struggle just reaching out and asking for support and reaching out to other related members and just really saying, like, this is where I'm at and this is what I need help with. And so I think that this program really provides that space and that comfort to kind of allow the service members and the women to really be themselves. So thank you both for sharing those aspects of the program. So we did touch a little bit about this, but if we could maybe share a little bit more about what the main program components are. We've talked about belonging, understanding, and doing, is from what I've learned from the manuscript. But maybe one of you can start by sharing a little bit more about what those components mean and how they relate to, I guess, how the Focus Forward program uses them.
Sure, Jenny, I can go. So developing the program, those pieces that you mentioned, those three components, belonging, understanding, and doing, is basically the foundation of the program. And King, in 2004, he had a model that he put forward about meaning in life. And this model is one that was used predominantly in the rehabilitation services. Fits so well with the Focus Forward program because we're trying, just like the model suggests, to enhance the quality of life and the ability for women to pursue their goals. So the three aspects, as we mentioned, belonging, understanding, and doing, all part of King's model that he put together after reviewing 30 theories and framework. Very comprehensive accumulation of theories and framework went into this work. And for Focus Forward, it really puts us at a position where we have this holistic and process-oriented framework that looks at those domains, and we touch on each of them. So for belonging, we're thinking of building satisfying relationships, having women feel socially connected in their community, and having them access social support. And oftentimes we might find, especially earlier when this program was being developed, there was a dearth of resources for women. And, you know, given their experiences of military culture and their status as non-traditional students, and just how not that many of them are oftentimes in the same space, you find that the belonging aspect of it is really important for them. And then with understanding, now we're working on those aspects where there might have been a little bit of incongruence between self as a woman and self as a service member, an environment that had a lot more men. And now we're looking at how these women can be aware of their position in the world, their position right now as student service members, as mothers, as full-time workers, also as caregivers, right? And trying for them to gain a sense of fulfillment in their potential. So with that self-understanding, we've seen from the literature that it's important for women, especially when they're in academic fields where where women were underrepresented. And you do find that we touch a lot on STEM, where you have women underrepresented in that area in terms of our production of the Focus Forward program. As we said, very evidence-based, and of course, that research is really insightful for us. And then, so we have women trying to develop their knowledge of their personal strengths. And we also touch on the identity integration, and this will be a very important part of the program that evolved from conversations with women and having that pilot program and really trying to understand how, as Kira mentioned, sometimes they don't want to self-identify as veterans. But this is a very important part of their experiences. And we work very hard with those women to try to mesh those identities, that we see the benefits of all of the different caps that they wear. And with those multiple identities, you don't want them conflicting with each other. Having it meshed together is where you have that identity integration. And research has found that people who are able to integrate their identities are able to have better health outcomes, better social outcomes.
That's great.
Right? And finally, with the doing, here we're trying to put the things that we've shown into action. So here we want to build their confidence so that they could actually go out and engage in those goal-directed behaviors. So actually utilizing the skills with problem-solving, with writing their resumes, with using those personal strengths and using those networking behaviors that they learned during the program so that they can achieve the goals that they've set for themselves. So overall, just this coming back into a circle where we have them understanding themselves, understanding their roles, and of course, also having that feeling of belonging to a group of like experienced women, and finally doing so that they can make sure that they meet their full potential.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Kanona, for I think you really like how you explained it. I was able to like visualize it really as a circle, as these women meeting and just socializing and really reflecting on who they are, who they want to become, and how they can do that. So thank you so much for sharing that. Kira, what would you like to share about the program components? I know.
I will say, I absolutely agree. First of all, Kona did a great job with finding that model and kind of connecting and applying it to Focus Forward. It makes so much sense. And in some ways, like you said, different components of the program like developed as we learned more, as more research was being done, as we heard anecdotally from fellows about their experience. And, I think sometimes as researchers, you go into a project or work, thinking that you have something down. And then as practitionally you get into it, you realize that the program is trying to tell you something else. And so I thought it was really appropriate that Kenona touched on just the identity, meshing all of those identities and kind of, in a sense, supporting these women when it comes to reconciling their military experiences, transitioning into the identity of being a student, and kind of how all of those different hats that you're wearing translate into different parts of your identity, and kind of pulling all of that together, because so often, and I can personally attest to this, I am less than 17. No one knows who they are when they're 17. You don't know who you are. You don't know what you want to do. And then you go into an environment where you have to be a certain thing. You have a job. You have a routine. You have commitments. You have responsibilities. It's all very structured. And that's kind of your sole identity. And so you're kind of immersed in that culture. In that experience. And then you transition into being a student. And, no one is there to tell you exactly what to do. Maybe you have an advisor who can kind of give you guidance. But a lot of people who have military experience really do well with explicit direction. And a lot of times you don't get that in a college environment, in a work environment. I guess it depends on industry and other factors. But it can be kind of a harsh experience if you are not getting support and kind of reconciling all of those different experiences and identities to kind of create yourself whole. I get asked a lot because I served in the military and then I went right into working in the military and veteran space in higher education, and that's where I have been for a very long time. And now I'm still in higher education, but I don't work with student service members and veterans anymore. And I definitely had to explain myself to fellows in the program, which I will say. But I get asked a lot, is there any particular reason why? It has to do with identity. It has to do with that I such a big part of my identity was Focus Forward, was being a woman, a woman veteran, a student service member at some point. And then I started to realize that as I found my partner and we have our home and we have our dog, that my identity, your identity shifts at different points in your life. And so as I am getting older and further away from my military experience, my military identity is kind of shuffling down the list of identities that I feel most connected to. And so a lot of women who but I think that she's a great example going through that process and how moving forward is a space for women to self-identify in a safe manner to talk about their military experiences, but it's also a place where, you know, that's not the only thing that they have to be. Like, they don't have to constantly wear it, like, as a badge. Like, they don't have to constantly wear their service as a badge. And, you know, just knowing that it's okay if when you go to Lowe's and even though you could park in the veteran parking that you choose not to, certain behaviors like that, that kind of are a really great example of just kind of everything, belonging, understanding, doing, and that identity work that really just kind of came out in and of itself as the program progressed over several years.
Wow. Thank you. I'm getting such a good visual. And so, Kira, you touched base with, I'm thinking of it as like a ladder. So you said kind of like your veteran status kind of just slowly went down in an identity. And I also kind of want to touch a little bit back. I want to reverse a little bit. And Kanona, you mentioned identities and this like multi-sectionality of identities, and I wondered if you could touch base on how the program kind of, like, maybe if you could share an example of how the program helped the student service members and these women kind of be able to, you know, I don't know, I guess be able to use these identities all as one.
From what I know, there was a lot of in the program. Especially during the weekend where they were all together, there was a lot of journaling, there was a lot of self-reflection, and talking about their experiences, and of course activities tailored to trying to get women to understand just how divided their identities may be. Or you may have several women who have, you know, maybe at a point they're maybe similar to Kira, they've been out of the service for a while and they've been able to work on their own so that they can have their identities more integrated.
Mm-hmm.
But just a lot of self-reflection, a lot of awareness of their past experiences and how that may influence their current experiences and where they would be going in the future.
Okay, thank you. Kira, I don't know if you want to add a little bit more to that. Sorry.
I can speak a little bit to it. I can't give away exactly what happened. But in line with what Kanona said, there's a lot of very intentional reflection and activities. Again, it just kind of circling back to that focus forward is a very intentionally designed safe environment for women to join us where they are at. And like Kanona said, that's all across the spectrum. Focus forward as a community is a very diverse community of women. There are younger women. There are women who have children. There are women who don't have children. There are women who are caretakers and children who are in their family, but, you know, maybe not their biological children. It is such a richly diverse community of women who are from all walks of life, have all different experiences. There are women who maybe go through a more intense reconciliation of their identities, and there also might be women there who are a little bit further along in that process, and there are some women there who maybe, you know, at a point that's similar to like what I described. And I think that's something that's really beautiful about Focus Forward is that all of these women seemingly come together from all different walks of life. Everyone looks different. Everyone has a different story. But at the same time, they all have the same story.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting everyone together in a room and reflecting on those experiences, they're all able. It really is amazing to watch just throughout the weekend, when the residential incredible to watch in person how, you know, day one, everyone shows up, everyone is a little apprehensive, they don't know anyone, and then throughout the weekend, to see them showing up for themselves, but showing up for each other, when each other needs help, supporting each other, they're already forming this community, because the walls are torn down, it's not a competitive environment, there's activities that support them in a safe way of exploring experiences that maybe they need to explore, or maybe they were not yet ready to explore.
Interesting.
And so all of that is kind of happening, and at the end of the weekend, they know that they have this community to support them, that they can trust, that they can go to for advice without judgment. You know, as Jenny mentioned earlier, like, you know, it's sometimes it's really hard to ask for help, and there are a lot of other communities out there that we kind of looked to, you know, in regards to just there's a lot of Facebook communities out there. There's a lot of Facebook communities out there for first-time moms, for new mothers. I have a friend who recently had triplets.
Oh, my gosh.
multiple Facebook groups. And so I think we take note of those things and realize what's going to, you know, maybe work. And a lot of it is trial and error. But just having that supportive environment with a safe space where they were, these women know that they can share their experiences and that they're just going to be met where they are at.
Thanks, Kira. I kind of get goosebumps through both of you talking about this program because I think, I don't know, I'm not sure why, but it's just exciting to see that the program is touching base on many aspects that the literature is reflecting on, personal experiences are reflecting on, and so it's kind of tying all these things together, but it's very powerful to know that these women are able to, you know, share their experiences, reflect on that. They're coming from different avenues and they may not know that they, you know, they needed to reflect on those things. And so I think that the Focus Forward allows those, you know, has a space for that. So that's really exciting. As we kind of previously mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we talked about this article that both of you contributed to and will be published at a later date, but what I'd like to kind of touch base on is kind of a little bit of what was reflected on that article, but really we can just kind of bring that to life. And so really what the article describes is an overview of the Focus Forward Fellowship, and it provides a first round of results from the 2017 Focus Forward Fellows cohort, a program evaluation, I guess, if you will. And one of the pieces I did want to kind of address is what did these women kind of look like, per se? Which type of universities were they in? And like you said, Kira, I think a lot of them were either single or some were in relationships. Some had children, some were caregivers. So we kind of touched base a little bit about that, what they looked like. But maybe if there's any bit more that we wanted to, either of you wanted to share.
Sure. So this manuscript was specifically written using data from, like you said, 2017, Focus Forward. In the year 2017, was a little bit of an anomaly. And so two cohorts actually took place in 2017. So every year, what happens is what we call the Focus Forward National Cohort. And that means, so every year, so the 2016 program, there was a national cohort in 2017, and then 2018, 2019, 2020, 2021. It just means that these women are coming from all over. It's a national application pool. Women from all over the country, all different types of universities. It gives the women enough time to get to know each other personally, and it also makes for, you know, a nice cohesive breakdown in small groups for activities and that sort of thing. We're really trying to create a personal, like a personable, like a smaller, more intimate environment. And so we have kind of learned that 20 is just a really good size. There are cohorts that have been less than 20, and there are cohorts that have been just right at 20. I know I mentioned all of these women kind of look different, you know, physically. You know, like if you look at their cohort photo, it's so great. Just watching you get to see all their smiling faces. But you really do, I think that is something that is important to the Focus Forward team and just MFRI as a whole, is that when we are looking for women to apply to Focus Forward, we want them to look at a cohort photo on MFRI's website and see themselves represented. That's just how they're going to know that, you know, it's a safe place for me. And that is in regards to everything. And so I would say that all of our cohorts have a great representation. And, you know, women all across the country are going to look at a photo and, you know, hopefully see themselves represented and know that it's a safe place for them to, you know, come as they are. And, you know, for one fellow, just in particularly, that meant that she felt safe, you know, to show up in with her hair. She likes to wear her hair purple. And so she knew that it was a safe place for her to come, that she didn't have to change anything about herself. Mm. She was just going to be welcome. In regards to universities, specifically, I'm a little bit rusty on that just because I've been out of the role for a little bit. But there is a large number of universities across the country who have participated in Focus Forward. There are some universities that are really just great partners and ambassadors who we have repeat fellows, you know, fellows coming from their university. Clemson is just one that I can think of off the top of my head. They've been a great partner. They have, we've had a fellow from Clemson, gosh, I think every, I'm not certain about this past year, this 2021, but there has been a fellow coming from Clemson every year since 2017 or 2018, I believe. And so it's just, you know, it's a really great opportunity to build partnerships with universities and who are looking to, you know, really make sure that women on their campus feel supported, and that has just grown. And Clemson is not the only one. There's a number of universities, yeah, I think that's kind of what I can share, I think, and I am not sure if Kanona has anything to add specifically.
Yeah, I have a little bit of information about the ladies. So generally the eligibility for the Focus Forward is that the student service members would have had to either currently be in the military service or they had an honorable discharge from any branch of service. So we have women from representation from all branches of the U.S. military. They would have had to be enrolled in a bachelor's or a postgraduate program and have a GPA of at least 2.75. So in 2017, we had a total of 19 fellows that are part of the manuscript, the analytic sample. But that year, the combined cohort was 27. As Kira mentioned, we had two separate programs. So with the women who were included in the manuscript and the results that we will speak about a little later, we had about 45% of them being white, and we had even representation between Black and Hispanic or Spanish women. So roughly about 22% in both groups. Most of the fellows were employed and they worked less than full time on average. Just about a third of them were married and a similar percentage divorced. And that is, it shows us just another challenge that we've seen with women in the service, where we have those high rates of divorce among those women, and also on another side, not less of them being married than their male counterparts. And most of the fellows did not have children, which was interesting. Roughly about a little over half of them did not have children, and those who had children had on average 2 children. We had some with as many as 4 children. Not surprising, the fellows were utilizing their education benefit at the time. Mm-hmm. So just about 93% of them were using that benefit. And interestingly, we had a large representation from postgraduate students. We had a little over 60% of our students be part of doctoral programs or master's degree programs.
Wow.
So we had a lot of individuals who had completed their bachelor's and had success, and yet they still saw that there would be so much value for them to be part of the Focus Forward program in their doctoral or master's degree programs.
Mm-hmm.
The fellows, the majority of them had current or prior military affiliations of active duty. And then we had some from the National Guard and a smaller percentage from the reserve and junior enlisted. I'm sorry, from the reserve. And the majority of them were junior enlisted. And as I mentioned, we had representation from all branches of the service. On average, the women had military service of just about 3 years. The maximum was 5 years of service for those ladies. So that just gives you an overall look at a few aspects of their lives. But I think Kira was able to bring them alive, describing them as she saw them in person.
Definitely. Thank you for sharing that, Kanona. I like paint this picture of all these women, and it's amazing that you said there was 19 fellows. Is that correct? So basically, go ahead, Kanona.
Yeah, so the 19 fellows is the number of them who completed all our waves of data collection.
Okay.
Yes, but we started out with 27 of them who were accepted.
Right, okay. So in 19, that's amazing to see so much diversity that you were talking about. And a lot of the research that I look at is like most of them white, most of them male, most of them and not from all these different avenues or diversities or walks of life. So that's really cool. I appreciate you both sharing that. I'm going to skip a little bit forward, and I really just want to focus in on what you guys found from that first evaluation, and what those findings kind of mean for providers and educators out in the field, and how they might be able to kind of use those findings in their work. So I'm combining two questions here, but I think if that's okay, whoever would like to kind of share what was found and kind of what we can make meaning of those things.
Sure, I think I can go. So just a highlight. So we did do special analyses to make sure that because we had 2 programs, that the changes that we saw within the 2 cohorts were similar. We also did analyses to make sure that there were significant differences between the cohorts.
Mm-hmm.
So once we've taken care of that, we'll look at the findings. So the findings we had, first starting out with the belonging. So we expected that we would have this great sense of community, that the women would have come into the program, and by the time they left, we would have seen an increase in their scores about feeling a sense of community in the Focus Forward group of women and mentors and whatnot, not find what we were expecting. Instead, we found that the scores were relatively low and it did not change significantly over the course of time.
Mm-hmm.
So even after that in-person retreat, several days being together, and then, you know, being in contact online with that online component of the program, we still did not find that women had this sense of community. And what we're thinking may be driving that is that once the women leave the retreat, then they're back into their multiple roles, those competing roles of work, school, family. And because of those demands, they may not be able to really continue those relationships that they may have built during that retreat. So definitely, you know, one of the things that we want to work on in the future is to look to see how those relationships shape, because we do have evidence from qualitative research that we collected, and that research is not part of the paper, but from the evidence that we have, we find that the fellows did connect with each other, but it appears that those connections are more with maybe smaller groups, that it may be a one-on-one connection, and our scale or our measurement of a sense of community doesn't capture this, because we're thinking of it overall as a community, that focus for a community, when in truth and in fact it might just be that they're building personal relationships with each other,
okay,
you know, within smaller groups. For understanding, so looking at personal strengths, we found there was a significant increase from the first assessment. So that's at the beginning of the retreat of that weekend. So from that period right through 6 months after the retreat, we find that there's an increase in the women's assessment or their awareness of their personal strengths. And that is sustained right through to the end. So a year later, while we're controlling for where they started out in the beginning, we're finding that these women are still developing an awareness of their personal strengths. And that is encouraging. Another thing that was encouraging was the identity integration. So this one is very interesting. We don't see significant gains in identity integration between the first assessment, which is just when they get to focus forward, and 6 months after. And then we don't see that either between 6 months after the retreat and at the end of the year. What we do find is there is a significant increase between the first time and the first assessment, and 12 months later. So it appears there's a good bit of time that goes before these women are able to see, you know, the fruits of all those program activities designed to create, to foster identity integration among that group. So this is a very interesting finding that we have to keep working on so that we can understand the mechanisms through which the program is able to help those women with identity integration. So with the doing area, we're looking at fellows' perception of gains in their resume and network and their networking skills. And this is an area we saw gains. So very early on, we're finding that fellows report significant increase in their skills when it comes to writing their resumes, as well as understanding the skills that they need for networking. However, the challenge we find is actually doing. So especially with the networking skills, when it comes to them participating in activities where they can use those skills among either their military pairs or professional networks, we're not seeing those gains. So it appears that although they have developed those skills, it's possible that they haven't found avenues for them to use their skills throughout the 12 months, or they just haven't been able to translate it. So this definitely is an area that we want to focus in the future because it looks like they're developing those skills, but we need them to be able to use those skills, because that is how they will really benefit from knowing, you know, how to network and whatnot. Right. So again, it is possible that just having all those challenges of having to work, having school, having families to take care of, that it's possible they haven't been able to engage in those activities. So, you know, we are very mindful of some of the challenges that the group has, but we're also very excited about the results that we've found and the possibilities for it. And of course, we'll continue to use those results to build a program and to develop the program to make sure that we're getting improvements in all of the areas that we've described.
Definitely. Thank you so much for sharing those, Kanona. I can definitely see kind of where the program has shifted. It's growing, and you know, you're improving from these findings, and it's exciting. It's really great work. Some really promising outcomes of the program. So it just sounds like it just takes a little bit more time within that year for these women to kind of recognize where those changes were, how they can use them in their own lives. Kira, would you like to add anything further from that?
Sure. I can just say a short note that I think something that makes Focus Forward so special and also makes the work of researchers and practitioners like kind of frustrating sometimes is that based off of the women who come into the program, their starting point it ends up, you know, obviously impacting data differently. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting, you know, we're talking about data from 2017, but, you know, just, you know, in last year, we've been thinking about and talking about data from, you know, 2018 and 2019 and then 2020 and 2021 and how that'll look different. And mm-hmm. Because, you know, the environment was different, you know.
Yeah.
There were, you know, significant changes made to the program in 2018 that would, you know, kind of result in potentially, you know, a variety of outcomes. And then with, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic, taking things virtual in 2020 and then 2021, it just so happens that everything is kind of coupled up nicely in terms of, like, you know, groups of, but, you know, I remember we weren't even anywhere close to being, you know, done with this manuscript, and Shelley was kind of, you know, thinking about, oh, you know, I wonder, you know, what the 2018-2019 mm-hmm. data is going to look like, and mm-hmm. so I think that that's, you know, just something, it's the nature of the work is that you're always thinking about that, you know, looking ahead, but, you know, even though we're specifically talking about the 2017 data, it's so interesting how different groups of data can look different based off of where the women are coming into the program, like what their starting point is. And also, just really interesting, you know, to talk about actual hard data versus anecdotal data.
Yeah.
So, you know, quantitative versus qualitative. You know, me being in the kind of practitioner, like program manager role, I often got to see a different side of the program, whereas a lot of people, you know, who worked on the research team or in other areas of MFRI kind of working with the data, you know, only see the data side. And so it's just so interesting, a wide variety of dynamics that all kind of come together to hopefully influence the way, like you said, that providers and professionals can support this unique population of women. And so I think that's really amazing. And I think that if there's, you know, I personally wanted to kind of come into this conversation just to talk about women veterans and service members in general, like the unique challenges and aspects of that population, how it ties into student, you know, being a student service member and a veteran, and then Focus Forward, all with the purpose of just trying to shed a little bit of light onto my takeaway message, if you will.
Thank you so much, Kira. I think it's hard to wrap up things in like with so much depth, because all the things that we've talked about today, there is so many great things moving forward, things that are so shifting. I hate to wrap this up so quickly because I think we're like getting at a place that's really awesome and there's much more conversation to touch base on. But what I think what we could do now is, like you said, Kira, those nuggets, what are those things that those professionals, service providers, educators, all those people that are working with service members, veterans, families, military families in general, what can they take home today? What can they use from the findings of the program, the findings that's there, then the research, and then these anecdotal things that we've learned today as well. Kanona, I'll let you share.
Yes, I think definitely there is a lot for us to learn, and the goal of all of this is that we can impact more than just the women who we touch in the Focus Forward program, but student service members and veterans on the whole. So I think one of the biggest takeaways is that the women are dynamic, and you know, the environment that has been created for a university for a traditional student may not work similarly to how it would work for the traditional student.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, when we're doing mentorship for women veterans or women student service members, it's very important to know their past experiences and how those experiences can help shape their today, their right now. And individuals, you know, providers who are working with these women need to always keep that in mind, that they have sort of multiple identities, mm-hmm. as we found. And depending on the phase in their life, they may need to have a different approach. So this program has shown that having mentorship is important. Having other women service members similar to themselves, that's an important lifestyle. Sorry, that's an important feature for women student service members, to have that camaraderie. And once communities can be built, if it's online communities or in-person communities that allow women to be themselves and allow women to share their experiences as much as they would like or as little as they would like, that would be helpful. And I think there's a lot to learn also for the classroom experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that it may be important for education providers to maybe share other groups, so traditional students as well as other non-traditional students, to understand that we have very diverse groups of people in the classroom, and that, you know, we have to all try to be open to their experiences and to be inclusive so that others who may not have similar experiences can also feel welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kanona. I think those are great take-home messages. Kira, would you like to share anything?
I think Kanona really wrapped it up beautifully, and I think something that I have learned just being in this space is that the more information you're willing to share, the more widespread the support is going to be. You know, there's only 20 spots available, like, per cohort, you know, for Focus Forward, and, you know, there's probably an unlimited amount of women who could benefit from the program. And so, you know, I think that what I have experienced just with the community of providers and professionals who are working in the military and veteran space is that everyone is always willing to, like, reach out and either, you know, ask for help or provide support. And so I think having an open-mindedness when working with this unique population, and just, you know, be approach, so that you are open-minded, that you're listening, and that you're meeting women where they are at. They're going to be more likely to open up to you, and it's going to allow for a more productive relationship. The result of that is that, that woman, veteran is going to get the support that she might need. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's just something that I would note as well.
Great. That's super helpful. I appreciate that. And I hope that our listeners today will be able to kind of incorporate those suggestions and those takeaways and be able to use them with anybody that they're working with.
From all of us at the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team, we thank you, Kenona and Kira, so much for your time chatting with me today. For those listening, thank you for joining us. I encourage you to refer to the resources mentioned in this podcast on our webpage under the list entitled Additional Materials. We encourage our listeners to check out other podcasts, blogs, and free webinars from our Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions website at militaryfamilieslearningnetwork.org/family-transitions.
This production of the Military Families Learning Network Family Transitions team is based upon work supported by the National Institute of Food and Agriculture, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Office of Military Family Readiness Policy, U.S. Department of Defense, under award numbers 2015-48770-24368 and 2019-48770-30366.